from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next on this morning's Forum program, at Stanford University, nearly 45% of faculty members for undergraduates are in humanities departments. But fewer students are taking those classes. Less than 18% of undergraduate applicants have a primary interest in the humanities. Schools nationally are seeing more students pick pre-professional majors that they see as having a more direct route to a job after college, and only about 7% of undergraduates major in the humanities nationally. That's about half as many as did in the 1970s. We'll discuss the values of a humanities education and what the downward trend means for schools and society after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. This hour, we're going to talk about what has, a good deal of people concerned in the academic world, particularly those who teach in the humanities or who feel that they would like to keep the torch going, and that is a decline in enrollments, which seems to be national and which there was a whole report about that was put out by the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, but certainly articles by people like David Brooks and articles by Adam Gopnik and so forth. And we want to talk about it in this hour. Richard Broadhead is joining us. He's president of Duke University and co-chaired the Commission on the Humanities and Social Sciences of the Academy, American Academy of Arts and Sciences. And welcome to the program, Richard Broadhead. Good to have you.
Thanks very much.
We also have Deborah Satz with us, who is professor of philosophy at Stanford and senior associate dean for humanities and arts there. And Deborah Satz, good to have you. Good morning.
Good morning.
We also say good morning to Scott Saul, who's here with us in studio, former student of Richard Broadhead's, I found out before we went on the air at Yale, and directs undergraduate studies in the English department, University of California, Berkeley. He's also a professor who teaches American literature and culture. And Scott Saul, good to have you back on Forum. Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Richard Broadhead, if I may, let's begin with you and let's find out just exactly as much as we can about the broad sense of what was in this report calling for a renewed commitment to the humanities and the social sciences, I should add, and the value of a liberal arts education.
Well, sure. Let me just begin by saying that the report isn't specifically about numbers of enrollment up or down. It rather is about a kind of lack of emphasis that has been played on the humanities that shows up in a variety of ways. I think everybody on my commission is aware of the benefits that have come from the movement in support of the STEM movement in recent years, science, technology, engineering, and math. But we're also aware that there's been no comparable effort to state the importance of the study of philosophy, literature, history, the arts. And I think evidence shows that when people go to lay out scant resources, there has been a kind of underinvestment or even a divestment from the humanities that we see, the cutting by over 40% of the number of Fulbright scholarships for foreign language study, cut of funds for the NEH. And so this was a group of people. There were actually 55 of us on the commission. It was a preposterous size, but very united in spirit, whose goal was to try just to make the public case. We don't think the public is unreceptive, to make the public case for the value of STEM and the arts founded in literature, history, and things of that sort. In other words, education in the arts and sciences rather than trading them off one against the other.
Yeah, some want to change the acronym to STEAM now and put the arts in there. And
Well, some have done that. I think that's a kind of a shortcut way to do it. And I guess people on my commission would feel that that only gives us one of the five letters.
Well, the report that was put out by your commission, huge as it was called The Heart of the Matter, and a lot of emphasis was put on the overall decline in literacy. You didn't necessarily have numbers, but that's pretty palpable, isn't it?
Well, you can look at the evidence over numbers of years, and I think when we look at American scoring on high school tests across the country and things of that sort, there's not a lot to be proud of there. We know that the truth is a complicated one. Our country has schools that are as good as any in the world. We have high school students who are as well-trained as any in the world, and they live 1 or 2 miles away from people who have a very mediocre training, and they live 1 or 2 miles from people who have an abysmal training, or you might say, who lack the equipment to pursue these things in later life.
There was a debate that you might have seen in the New Republic between Steven Pinker and Leon Weisseltler all about the humanities and the sciences, the two cultures, as they were called for so long, between the Snow and Leavis controversy. And I'd like to just get your take on this, because I'm kind of using a shorthand method here, but essentially Pinker's argument was that they have to be working hand in hand. He talked about conciliation between the two, and Weisseltler said, no, what he's really denouncing is a sense of too much scientism, and he's trying to separate the two. And are you talking about equity here between science and humanities then?
Let me say one thing. Anybody looking out at American life is not going to feel that there's an excess of scientism in this country. There's been an assault on knowledge itself, on education itself in this country. The disregard people give to scientific evidence, well-established features of scientific debate, that's a worry to us. Our point is the person who's going to get the best education is somebody who has developed all their muscle sets, the muscle sets associated with science, scientific observation, scientific inquiry, scientific reasoning, and the ones that are also founded on the humanities side.
What about the effect that there is certainly less interest perhaps in studying and majoring in humanities? I mean, if we're looking for causes, I'm just wondering what if there was a consensus among the 58 of you that this is a result of, at least on the college campuses, many feel students wallowing in debts and a major not leading to a job from the humanities, that sort of thing, in addition to what you mentioned, the funding being decreased.
Well, that's certainly part of it. As for the figures about majors, those vary from school to school. And Scott, I know, has written to the effect that they're not going down everywhere, and that's also true. Since the recession, there has just been a world of anxiety about education and its value in this country. And I don't think that's going to go away anytime soon, and certainly not before the economy rebounds. You know, in many places, this takes the form of people saying the only education that's worth getting for our kids is the one that gets you a job on day one. And you probably know that there are states that have required all colleges in the state to post on their website the salary of graduates 1 year after graduation, broken down by majors. So you can see, boy, you'd better major in this instead of that, because look at the difference it makes the day you get out. The people on my commission found this an amazingly short-sighted way to think about education. Education is preparation for life. It doesn't show its value altogether on the first day you get out or in the first job you get. It shows its value in the way it equips you to do lots of different things, to seize opportunities as they come along. And, you know, we're continually amazed to discover what well-known figure in American life had actually studied the humanities in their early life. It's a pretty amazing roster.
Richard Broadhead, again, is the president of Duke University. He co-chairs the Commission on the Humanities and Social Sciences of the Academy, American Academy of Arts and Sciences. And Deborah Satz is professor of philosophy at Stanford, senior associate dean for the humanities and arts. The numbers at Stanford do stand out in some ways, as they do at other elite institutions, Deborah Satz. Correct?
That is correct. You know, I agree with the point that was made that the decline in the humanities numbers is not uniform. It's experienced very differently at different institutions, but Stanford is a very particular kind of institution. We're located in Silicon Valley. We have a world-class engineering school, and we have certainly seen increasing interest by our undergraduates in the STEM fields, which is great. But the numbers, I think I just saw this morning, that the number of engineering students is now well over 35% of all undergraduates are majoring in engineering, mostly in computer science.
Now, let me give some figures, actually, because I have them before me. The faculty at Stanford make up about 45% in undergraduate humanities, is about 45%. But
that's only of the school, so it's about 42%, and that's only of the School of Humanities and Sciences. So that doesn't count the faculty in the School of Engineering. So
but there
what's
are what?
Interesting about Stanford is we admit undergraduates who can major in subjects in the engineering school or in the School of Humanities and Sciences.
But I'm also reading you only have about 15% of the students who are enrolled in humanities courses.
That's the number of majors.
Yeah.
The number of enrollments is slightly better than that, and in some classes is actually quite robust. but it is definitely true that we have a lot of excellent humanities classes that are undersubscribed by students. Who are really partly in very demanding majors with high unit counts and partly thinking about college in a very pre-professional way, which I think is a cultural shift here and something that we need to work to rebalance.
Let's talk about that cultural shift and maybe what you're doing, too, to at least ameliorate this as a problem, because a lot of it may have to do with proximity, as you said, to Silicon Valley. But a lot of the criticism that has come down in terms of these enrollments coming down or majors coming down is that it's a self-inflicted wound by humanities, and that humanities itself is a tough sell. And you would say what to those kind of cultural arguments?
I certainly think the humanities is a tough sell. It's not obvious to people what the humanities is. It's not a natural kind term. People know about English or history, but when you talk about the humanities, often people have no idea what that encompasses. So there's a packaging, communication issue. It's certainly true that some of the humanities is become very specialized, and for a lot of students, they don't have an easy way in. So we've been working a lot at Stanford to create more entry points for students into humanities fields by creating big undergraduate introductory courses, which fell away at the elite schools, or were often taught by not regular faculty members. And now we're trying to really raise the profile of introductory course teaching, like Introduction to Philosophy is a growing class, and Introduction to Art History. And then we're also working on sort of big idea courses that bring together humanities perspectives integrated with perspectives from other disciplines. So one of my favorite courses is called From Gutenberg to Zuckerberg, and it's a history of networking.
It reminds me of the old course from Beowulf to Virginia Woolf, the same spirit. Yeah. Deborah Satz, again, is professor of philosophy at Stanford and senior associate dean for the humanities and arts. And Scott Sowell's here in studio, and he's director of undergraduate studies in the English department at UC Berkeley, and also a professor who teaches American literature and culture, and did an article on this in the New York Times, which came to the conclusion UC Berkeley, 5% and holding.
Yes, and I think that's true of a lot of places. I completely second the comments that have been made by the other panelists about the importance of encouraging people to go into a world of ideas when they go to college and think about it as giving them equipment for life, not simply a way to earn money afterwards. But when you look at the statistics, I think there is a really sharp difference between the experience of large state universities, of which Berkeley is one, and the experience of elite private universities. And so at Berkeley, we have trouble staffing our English classes. Our lecture halls are full to the brim. And, I'm not going to say this is going to continue for in perpetuity.
Sustainability.
But this is, I think that we're in a different kind of ecological system where, and this is a bit of historical speculation, but I think at places like Yale or Brown or Cornell, they were really known for the liberal arts. And then in the 70s, 80s, 90s, they made a concerted effort to build up their STEM fields. And what do you know? That strategy worked. And it attracted people to those fields. It attracted people at Yale to Science Hill and so on. And so those universities still have quite a number of people majoring English, but not the historic levels that you saw in the 60s, where somebody like Mitt Romney was an English major.
Well, since you mentioned English majors, of course, full disclosure, I'm an English professor, but it's been 30 years since the culture wars you mentioned in the New York Times article, and you say there's been a continuity of curriculum. I got to tell you, though, with all the theory that's invaded English departments and emphasis on things like deconstruction and more specialization, and even David Brooks, I think, had an interesting point that we have to take into consideration, that a lot of the emphasis on aesthetics has moved into the political realm and to a kind of hard-edge political realm in many instances.
I think, there's definitely was a trend. I think that moment of the culture wars has passed a bit. And also, again, I'm thinking about the Berkeley perspective. Berkeley is a very volatile place in terms of, as a city. It's very lively, always lively political conversations. At the same time, if you zero in on the English curriculum, since we've been focused so much on staffing the standard issue courses like, you know, Milton, Chaucer, literature from, you know, Old English to, you know, 1600, Renaissance. As a result, most of our teaching goes to those big courses, 18th century novel. They're still kind of, things are framed in that kind of aesthetic, historical way. I think it's only rare, actually, that we get to teach those boutique courses that you're talking about. That would be the seminar that would be about, you know, queer theory or something like that. So I think that if you look at it proportionally, what's striking is the continuity with the curriculum of old.
The arguments, Richard Broadhead, keep coming back to what's the value of the humanities, and many people are concerned about, obviously, their kids getting jobs in this post-recession, or maybe it's not even post. In fact, I was reading an article where somebody was writing that a young person had gone into a salon to talk about literature, and their parents said, get them out of there. They want them deprogrammed. I mean, there is a kind of strange association with a lot of the concerns about what we're talking about here. And Adam Gopnik, I'm wondering what your response is to what he had to say in The New Yorker. He said the reasons to study the humanities is because we're human and that's enough. We love books and we ought to stay with them and talk about them in an institutional or institution fashion.
Well, you know, it's one of the lessons you can learn from the humanities, that many things can be true that seem to be contradictions to each other. I completely agree with Adam Gopnik. The reason that literature is compelling to us is it's the long record of the human. Humans are the only known species that have the ability to live outside themselves, live into the hopes and fears and dreams and imaginings of other people in other cultures, other times, other places. That's an immense extension of our experience, and that's what the humanities provides. They're a source of wisdom, a source of reflection, all those things. Now, when you've got a kid about to graduate from college, you can still believe all that and still hope that the child is employable. And I think that the trouble is that nowadays there's been a lot of rhetoric to the effect that so-called soft subjects don't lead to jobs at all, or even to good jobs. One of the pieces of information that the Humanities Commission was really struck by was a poll that's been done of CEOs and HR people across the United States, discovered 3 out of 4 employers said that what they want in new hires are skills like critical thinking, complex problem solving, abilities in written and oral communication. We've been a little bit talked out of the value of those skills, but those are all founded in the humanities. And as I say, I don't think anybody would claim that the humanities are the source of every possible equipment for life, but they're very essential equipment. And so people ought to be able to think about both their short-term and long-term value, both what they can get you in the world and what they can get you as a living, reflective human being.
Well, let's talk about the humanities and jobs. In fact, Deborah Setz, I know you've had a good deal of focus on first-generation immigrants and have pointed out that Stanford and other elite schools are really expanding their financial aid to students with fewer resources. And isn't it, I guess, axiomatic that those families may have less interest in the humanities, opting for majors that are feeders into jobs?
Yeah, I certainly think that you know, again, the data suggests that majoring in the humanities is good, actually,
that's
for
right.
your employment prospects.
That's not the public perception, though.
But that's not the public perception. And it's often
English
not
majors...
the perception of the students. And one of the things we've been doing is we had a meeting with all the, an open forum with all the deans of the different schools, our medical school, our business school, our law school, talking about the fact that the acceptance rates to those schools is actually higher for humanities students
right.
than for students majoring in other areas.
Yeah, I think President Broadhead had a point here. Richard Broadhead? Yeah.
Well, just one of the things that another of the little factoids that was presented to my commission is, you know, there's a test called the Graduate Management Admission Test. This is the test you take if you're on your way to business school. Humanities majors scored higher systematically on that than business majors did. So people just need to broaden their idea of what's good equipment for what.
I guess, Scott Sahl, may come down to marketing. I mean, how do you make the case that humanities is essential for really all fields, particularly with things like critical thinking?
Well, I think that basically the humanities allows us to articulate experience, to give it language. And that's not a central focus of the other disciplines, as, you know, other branches, as wonderful as they are. It's not about putting things in language. Once you've articulated your world, then you can put it up for inspection. You can criticize it using other language that you've articulated. And then also you can imagine a new world. You know, I think about Steve Jobs, who, you know, 2 years ago came and said, you know, Apple, what it's about is technology, of course, but it's about technology married to the spirit of the liberal arts. And I think that's one reason that Apple has a certain aura, is because it is so interested in design, in user experience, in these kind of intangibles that are part of interacting in the world and about the artistic experience married with technology.
Well, let me do this. Let me invite our listeners to join us, and particularly want to hear from some young people who are considering a major to call in. You think the humanities degree is worthwhile? And also, those of you who are calling in can chime in with reflections on how your degree has served or not served you in whatever your major is. In fact, excuse me, you can call us now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786, and we welcome your involvement in the program. Any questions or comments you might have, or address the questions that I just threw out there. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. You can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And let me go to some emails that are coming in here. Here's Awana, who says, I don't think a degree in just humanities gives you an advantage as an employee anymore. With so many others with similar degrees, those looking to enter the workforce need something extra to distinguish themselves. I do think the humanities are important, though. It's important to learn to write well, to learn history, to open your mind to varying experiences and points of view by taking classes that deal with minority and women's studies. This is why I took 5 years and double majored. I got my biology degree so I'd be employable and now work in biotech, and I got my comparative literature degree because I love literature. Can't necessarily have it both ways, but here's Chris in San Jose who writes, humanities are important and they enrich critical thinking and world awareness. Unfortunately, they don't pay the bills. If you're going to invest $100,000 in an education, you want a return on your investment. Personally, I was a mechanical engineering major with a history minor. Gone are the days of patronage for philosophers and artists that Aristotle, Plato, and Shakespeare had. Unfortunately, in our modern age, these have become part-time jobs. And another listener writes on the website, I am happy to have majored in English. Most of what I love about the world, I owe to the principles of paying attention that I derive from formally studying literature. Whenever I hear someone saying that studying in the humanities has little market value, I always think you're missing the point. Reading and thinking about reading, for instance, makes us more skeptical, more competent, more interested in the world and its people. Sounds like the traits of an excellent CEO to me. Besides, technically, every discipline is a humanity. Incoming college students might do well to remember that the department structure of universities is a modern construction. Why not strive to be a polymath? And one more email from Matthew who says, so those who don't pursue a humanities degree are less prepared for life. Arts and humanities majors should be glad of any decline. This means they have a greater chance of actually finding a career in their area of interest. So we will bring more of your calls. We'll bring your calls in when we return after a brief break, but also your emails. Again, you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment or tweet us. And our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Our guests include Richard Broadhead, the president of Duke, who is co-chair of the Commission on the Humanities and Social Sciences of the Academy, American Academy of Arts and Sciences. I want to get a little footnote in here, by the way. Stanford, with their declining enrollments in humanities, actually have lower enrollments in social sciences. I think that's right, isn't it, Deborah Satz?
Boy.
They have, yeah. Social sciences have had the biggest drop.
Yeah. And Deborah Satz is also with us, professor of philosophy at Stanford, senior associate dean for the humanities and arts there, and Scott Solin, studio director of undergraduate studies in the English department, University of California, Berkeley, professor who teaches American literature and culture. Again, we'll hear from more of you when we return. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about the decline in the humanities in higher education. At Stanford, for example, nearly 45% of faculty members for undergraduates are in humanities departments, but fewer students are taking those classes, and fewer than 18% of undergraduate students have a primary interest in the humanities. Schools nationally are seeing more students pick pre-professional majors that they see as having a more direct route to a job after college, and just about 7% of undergraduates major in the humanities nationally. That's about half as many as did in the 1960s. 70. So we're discussing the values of a humanities education and what the downward trend means for schools as well as for society. An email from a listener named Alex who says, in terms of jobs, what's the value of any degree? The Bureau of Labor Statistics says 20% of jobs in America require a four-year degree. It also says that the U.S. graduates 250,000 scientists and engineers every year, yet only 180,000 jobs in those areas open up every year. That's a discussion for another day. You may want to indeed put your two cents in here, and if you'd like to email us, our email address is forum@kqed.org, or you can go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. Let's go to your calls, and let's go to Jennifer first. Good morning.
Hi, yeah, I'm a current Berkeley student, and I transferred from the junior college in the city, and with all of us who got into Berkeley, and we're so excited, the first thing we do is you go and you check the major that you're interested to see not only the salary of the past graduates, but like what fields they went into. And many people, like I was really interested in sociology and that was my passion, but at the same time, many people who graduated with that degree ended up working in fields like retail or, you know, basically not what they were expecting to be doing with a degree in sociology or social welfare or something along those lines. And it's almost where, yeah, you might be employable, but a lot of times you have to go on to the graduate schools, like get a master's, like get a PhD, like go to med school. It's people aren't really looking for a sociology degree in, you know, the business world. It's just, that's what it's like. So many people don't choose them, or they choose them to double, which is what I've done.
Can I get a comment from you, Professor Saul?
Well, I think that when we think about the value of the Berkeley education, you have a major. And then you have the skills that emerge from the major. And what I always say to my students is that, you know, try to maximize your experience. You know, you can go through the Berkeley, you know, 4 years and not write that as many papers, take classes where you're just doing more exams, or you can focus on taking the seminars where you're writing papers, where you're getting feedback on drafts and get, you know, developing these skills so you can harness them in the world after Berkeley. So I encourage all Berkeley undergraduates listening to this to go for the gusto and think about not just, you know, the course, what you're learning in terms of the material of the course, which will get you to the degree, but what are the skills that you're going to be able to develop through that course and work your darndest at it.
Well, let me thank Jennifer for the call. Here's another older alumni or alumnus from Berkeley. Dusty, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. Was lucky enough to graduate from Berkeley last spring at the age of 59. I actually know Professor Salt, but that's irrelevant. But because I graduated 40 years after going to school the first time, I had an experience of comparing students that I went to school with last spring in my English degree versus the students I went to school with in the 1970s. And I have to say that the students I went to school with in the last couple of years were on fire in a really different way in terms of loving to read and to write and to discuss. And I have to take a little credit as a parent because I feel like my generation of parents were so emphasized reading to our kids. And, you know, my daughters, I have two daughters that graduated before I did, and they both majored in literature. And I really believe that, you know, because we read to our kids, Harry Potter didn't hurt. I mean, every kid that I went to English class with, just about every single one was like a Harry Potter fanatic. And I feel like the kids that come in have a real fire in this generation that I think comes from the intimacy that happened when we were reading to our kids, to be really, really honest. And I don't, you know, what I saw with the culture wars in terms of the difference 40 years later is I feel like, you know, that whole schism between style and content, you know, what's the style and what's the beauty and what's the aesthetic of literature versus, you know, does this literature reflect some kind of racism or sexism? I feel like that's been synthesized so that we get to talk about both things and both all the whole entire piece of a work of literature is discussed in the same way that that's what we should be talking about in the world. You know, I remember in the 70s trying to talk about something in a piece of literature that disturbed me in terms of the content or what it implied and really being shut down. And that was so frustrating, where only aesthetics, you know, in 1972 or 3 were really being discussed. And now we get to see things as a whole, which I think is fantastic. And the last thing, I'm grateful for the time, but the last thing I want to say is my daughters both majored in literature. My first daughter came out and immediately got a job because she could write, and she wrote for all the jobs that are opening up on the Internet. Every single website needs writers, and they are desperate to find people who can write and express in a really, you know, powerful way, which is what an English major specifically can teach you.
Dusty, I'm glad you called, and I thank you for that call. And I want to actually go from the call from Dusty to you, Deborah Satz, just in terms of a question that's often asked of professors who've been around a long time, like yours truly. How do the students shape up now compared to, say, decades ago? She said they're more on fire. You find that?
You know, I have a small sample size of Stanford students, but, you know, the students are fantastic. I think they were fantastic 25 years ago, and I think they're fantastic today. I wanted to just make one point that I think it's important to keep distinct, the issue of majors from the issue of enrollments and experience, deep experience in humanities classes, because students don't have to major in English to have a deep experience in an English class. And, you know, we forget that if we focus simply on the number of majors. I'm personally less concerned about the number of majors and more concerned that students, regardless of what they major in, have a deep engagement with what the humanities has to offer. And that, you know, includes what some of the skills the caller just mentioned, writing, reasoning, learning about the lives of other people, empathy. You know, you can make a long list of very distinctive skills that you get in seminars and discussion, in engaging with history and literature and philosophy.
Well, since Dusty mentioned jobs on the Internet, Richard Brighthead, I'm inclined to ask you if the commission took stock of what is often brought into the calculus of this whole discussion, and that is the effect of the Internet. You know, one hears that students don't necessarily read as much because they're texting all the time, or they're reading emails, or things have become so abbreviated that, you know, to give an assignment of, let's say, a long, arduous read of a novel doesn't quite get the reception it used to.
Well, you certainly have heard lots of people talk about this as the age of the short attention span. I find it interesting if you look back to cultural commentators writing around 1900, many of them are bemoaning the short attention span brought about by the age of the newspapers. This has been an issue that's been with us a long time. One of the things that education can do is to teach you to slow down, to teach you to pay attention, to teach you to analyze instead of just becoming the mental victim of whatever comes along to you. And that is a very valuable skill. And indeed, getting people to read long books. This is more challenging than it used to be. You know, for all that, I think I certainly regard the age of the Internet. This is an age of communications opportunities, and indeed of educational opportunities. I've talked to a lot of people who've spoken as if, like, online coursework is going to be the death of the humanities. But it interests me that Coursera, the open massive courses that come out of Stanford, the one that has had the professor who's had the biggest enrollment in the first two runs of Coursera has been a philosophy professor in a course on how to reason and argue. So that suggests something that I find very heartening, which is that there is a fundamental human hunger for these things, and that the age of the Internet will find new ways to feed it.
Listener named Ben writes on our website, you can write your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. He writes, could one of your guests speak to the idea that mostly white upper middle class students fill the humanities classes? How can anyone get a degree in something like philosophy and then afford to pay back the debt when they will probably get a low paying service sector job at McDonald's, and those who can afford an English degree are only wealthy elites who have their parents' money to fall back on? Scott,
well, I can speak to that at Berkeley. Again, I can't speak to it at the private university. I feel like they have a different ecology. But at Berkeley, we have many of our English majors are transfer students coming from junior colleges. You know, they are not coming. They're quite socioeconomically diverse. Our student body is, again, quite diverse by gender, race, religion, what have you. So I just think that doesn't pan out as a demographic description of the major. I think that that may be perhaps because, you know, the Berkeley tuition is less. And so maybe that is one of the factors that plays out here.
And Janet Napolitano has put a freeze on it now, in fact.
Yes.
Can you address this, Deborah Satz, from your perspective?
So I actually think, as I said, there's an information problem because Stanford, so actually one Stanford undergraduate told me that, wrote about an experience when she declared a major in creative writing. A friend got her a button that said, "I majored in English, would you like that with fries?" And I think that is a perception that a lot of students have that is simply not true.
Or the old, the bad old joke, "I'm an English major, what's the regiment?" Do you remember that?
Yes. So I think, you know, because of Stanford's prominence in the, you know, world, Stanford students do fine getting jobs. And not to say that students aren't right to be concerned about jobs, but majoring in English is absolutely no barrier to getting a good job. I think that there's a fear from a lot of the first-generation students we have that that they're taking a risk by majoring in a humanities subject. And so there, the information that the university is trying to provide, that it's actually not true, that your career is on hold. And in fact, for many careers, as we were talking about with business school or medical school, a humanities degree is actually a benefit to entering those professions.
Well, President Broadhead, I know you have to leave us in a couple of minutes, so let me just have a concluding note from you about, well, how sanguine you are about the future of the humanities, or what your ambivalence may be.
Well, you know, it's never as if there has been mass movements in favor of the humanities. That's not the nature of it. At the same time, these are deeply rooted human needs, human desires. All those first emails that you read to us are all, even when people said they majored in biology, they talked about their love for literature, their love for history, their love for philosophy. Humans want to know more about the world, and they want to know more about themselves, and the humanities is a powerful way to do it. When I hear all this talk about jobs, I think of one of the people I really learned from on my commission was Eduardo Padron. He's the head of Miami-Dade College, which is the country's biggest community college. It has almost 200,000 students. Most of them are first generation. The great majority of them are from underrepresented minorities. And the point he made when he joined our commission was the humanities are maybe even more important in that setting than elsewhere. He said, in a college like that, the things people do indeed take courses, specific courses, because they lead to specific jobs, but they all study things beyond the things that they need to get that job, and it's the things they take beyond that give them the equipment to get the second job or the third job and eventually to get to a job that's a full use of their powers and fulfilling to them. So I would just say I'm not recommending the humanities as against anything else. Humans should look to build as many powers of the mind as they possibly can, and the humanities are certainly among those.
Richard Broadhead, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Richard Broadhead, again, president of Duke and co-chair of the Commission on the Humanities and Social Sciences of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, and we'll go to more of your calls. Jack, you're on. Good morning.
Yeah, Mike, thanks. Bear with me. I guess I'm going to be giving you a little disgruntled student. I went through a school in San Francisco, got a degree in film and literature, and I've been struggling ever since. And I guess my cautionary tale to the young people out there, I'm in my late 40s now, and I've had a difficult time finding a lucrative career that would give you health insurance and the type of pay you need to live comfortably in the Bay Area. And I would say, had I had a chance to do it over again, had someone told me when I went and got this degree that it's very difficult to really parlay it into a lucrative type of profession, I would be doing something such as nursing, engineering, something in computer science. And the panelists who said that there's all these jobs that pay online, you could be a writer and all that, I just don't see that. For every Dave Eggers and Stephen King and for everyone who's making money as a blogger, you got so many people out there who just aren't making any money, and they're struggling, and they're taking jobs that are, you know, difficult and lower end. And so I would just say, if anyone is out there listening, I would rethink a degree in the humanities. Although I do believe in the humanities, I think they're necessary, and they're a good way to get a good, well-rounded education. It is a difficult, competitive market out there right now. Thanks.
Thank you for the call, Deborah Satz and Scott Sowell. Let's go first to you, Deborah. What would you say to someone like Jack, the message that he's conveyed here?
So I would certainly never, from my comfortable position, say that a concern about the future in employment isn't a serious concern. And so I think students are right in a, volatile economy to be thinking about that. And there are huge problems with student debt. So I think that needs to be on the table. That's why I have been talking about engagement with what the humanities has to offer, as opposed to necessarily majoring in the humanities. There are skills that you get from engaging with the humanities that are important for employment. They're important for citizenship. They're important for your own development. They're important for enjoyment. And students shouldn't be shortchanged for those. And we need people who develop those skills. And some of those skills are very transportable into the economy. But the problem is if you choose your undergraduate degree solely motivated by trying to get a job, first of all, you might do something you really don't like for a number of years and then find yourself not able to get a job anyway because the economy is volatile and because we can't predict. I mean, numbers pump up and down. At one point, economics was one of the biggest majors at Stanford. Now it's had a very, very big drop, in part because of the contractions and volatility in the profession. So I just think students should be thinking about employment, but they shouldn't. The point of college is not simply preparation for jobs.
Well, in fact, I'm looking at an email here, and I know Scott Sowell wants to weigh in, but Jamie writes, can the guest talk to why students are more choosing career-focused majors? I personally believe the reason originates from a backlash to prior generations' idealism and beliefs. The stress on the humanities in prior generations have led to our current economic situation, and current students have reacted by rejecting the ideals and beliefs of the 60s and 70s. So that's brought into the conversation, too. Scott Sowell?
Yeah, I think that, in our department, I take the concern of the caller very seriously. His trajectory and the frustrations of that. I think it's very hard to be a writer these days. It's a great time to be a reader, but it's difficult to make money. It's very difficult to make money as a writer. One thing that we've been doing in the Berkeley English Department is to actually create programs that link up Berkeley undergraduates majoring in English with alumni who majored in English and are now in many different places in the Bay Area doing so many different kinds of jobs. By creating those linkages while they're an undergraduate, they're both studying what they love and preparing for some kind of future or seeing the trajectories they could take. And I do think that's something that humanities departments should think about doing more of. We should do more of it in the Berkeley English Department too, is how while you're following your bliss in the English major, also make connections and think towards the future.
Well, here are just a couple of emails that are you're talking about trajectories, almost contradictory. Jonathan writes, I went to a private liberal arts college majoring in philosophy. I found myself pigeonholed into the world of nonprofits where the pay is little and the stress is high. My income has struggled to match the debt I have incurred while studying philosophy. And then you have Sarah who writes, I am currently in $100,000 debt pursuing a graduate degree in art history from a Bay Area university. And even though the amount of money I owe will take me most, if not all, my natural existence to pay back, I do feel that the value placed on STEM is short-sighted. Incidentally, my career is in marketing, which is a fairly lucrative career path for humanities majors. It amused me when the guest said that the humanities suffers from a lack of marketing when, by and large, those who were in the marketing field were humanities majors in college.
Good point.
Daniel is our next caller up. Hi, Daniel.
Hi. I'm a senior in high school, and so it's really this whole kind of college. I've been on the brunt of the whole marketing campaign lately, and I find that it's very much, from what I've seen, is very much centered towards math and science, and that especially living in San Jose, around all this technology, I mean, you get screamed at you, go into engineering, go into, these sciences. And I think that, I personally really would like to pursue a humanities degree, but I need to be convinced, and I need to be shown that it's really going to work. And so I think that one of the problems we need to fix in our young people, especially in high school and junior high, is really focusing on the powers that you can get through literature and history and just all the wonderful ways you can, just how they are just as important as technology.
So what are you going to major in, Daniel? Do you know?
Actually, I am planning on majoring in political science and perhaps minoring in journalism, but I would also love to look at English and stuff. I'm kind of going through a lot of them.
You sound like a young man on your way toward a good education. I hope you get it, and I thank you for calling us. Let me get another caller on here, and that's another Daniel from San Jose. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm an engineer in Silicon Valley and not really majored in liberal arts or anything, so not your model audience. But I can't tell you how many times in the workplace I've seen a lack of, you know, these soft skills by other engineers that I work with. So many ideas that are great just die in the packaging of the idea itself. And I feel like, you know, the exposure to humanities and, you know, the reasoning skills and the empathy skills are just so important and lacking in the engineering community. I feel like your panelists have nailed it when they say, you know, try and make the sciences marry, you know, the liberal arts and these soft skills so that you can get more well-rounded people.
Thank you for that call. In fact, it brings up the whole question, Scott Sullen, let's address it for a moment, of interdisciplinarity type courses. For many years, I was involved in a science-humanities convergence program to try to bring the two cultures, as they're so often characterized, humanities and sciences, together. Do we need more interdisciplinarity, do you think? Is that the ticket here?
I think interdisciplinarity is wonderful. I think polydisciplinarity is even better, which is to say, to be grounded in two disciplines fully so that you can really put them together. But of course, you know, we, for example, a course in bioethics. You know, this is, we live in this age where, you know, the kind of the technology has transformed, for example, how we have children. And what are the ethics of all these situations that develop as a result? Surrogates, donation, you know, egg donation and so on. You know, these are complicated new issues, and we need sharp minds that both understand the science involved and understand and can deal with the ethical complexity that the science is raising. So I think interdisciplinary is great. I do think, though, that, you know, you're still going to need the people who could tell you how a poem works, why we should do scansion on it, how to unfold the rhythm, the relationship between sound and sense in a work of literature. Those won't go away, even as we have these new interdisciplinary conjunctions.
Well, Dean Satz, the program that I was involved in was called the Nexa program. It was funded by Mellon and NEH, involved having two teachers, a scientist and a humanist, in the classroom. And we found after a number of years we could ill afford to do that. We just didn't have the revenue to do it. May be a different case at Stanford. But what about interdisciplinary majors as opposed to just the old standard or traditional majors from your perspective?
Our largest majors are interdisciplinary majors, and I think that's great. There are, you know, problems don't, you know, the world's problems don't respect departmental boundaries, and some of the new interdisciplinary majors try to bring knowledge from different aspects of the traditional departments together around a common core of questions. What we've been trying to do is to take the largest interdisciplinary majors at Stanford, which at the moment are human biology, international relations, and science, technology, and society, and bring more humanities perspectives into those interdisciplinary majors. So, and the chairs of those interdisciplinary majors have been very receptive to trying to bring in, you know, culture and language into international studies or questions of bioethics into science, technology, and society or human biology. We've also just adopted as a school an undergraduate ethics requirement, which hopefully will bring ethical reasoning across all the disciplines to confront the ethical questions that arise everywhere.
We had some great courses in the old Nexa program. We had the Darwin Revolution and physics and literature and a course called Myth, Magic, and Medicine. And they drew a lot of students. But then, again, the cost of having two teachers, because that was what it was based on. Let me get another caller on here. Jennifer, that's you. Hi.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for for taking my question. I really appreciate this panel. These are sort of issues I've been thinking about a lot lately. I'm a PhD major at Berkeley, Go Bears. And we've been working most recently with pre-service teachers in teaching English to young folks in urban schools in Oakland and the Bay Area. One of the things that we found is that while the Common Core still introduces like a technology component in terms of integrating to English classrooms, our English classrooms are still really tech-centric and based in sort of print and don't necessarily take advantage of the affordances of digital technologies and, for example, as you just mentioned, integrating different disciplines. So my question for the panel is, how would you use digital technologies to make maybe our humanities classrooms a little more relevant, or are there platforms out there that you could see as being a nice integration to kind of maybe bring the humanities forward a little bit?
Well, it's a good question. I wish we had more time. That is something we ought to explore in a separate hour. But Deborah Satz, Stanford, you're bringing a lot more technology and digital stuff in, aren't you?
We are. We have a really vibrant program in digital humanities with people using, computers to do things like model the changing nature of the Roman roads or population changes along the California Railroad or who did Voltaire write to and how many times did he write to them? So to show, networks of connections. So the computers and computation platforms have been used to create new knowledge, both visualization, but also to reveal new patterns that hadn't been seen before.
Well,
so I think that's a really exciting area.
I think it is, too, and it's promising, and I hope that we can bring more humanities in whatever ways to more students. Thank you both, Deborah Satz from Stanford, Professor of Philosophy and Senior Associate Dean for Humanities and Arts, and Scott Saul, Director of Undergraduate Studies in the English Department at UC Berkeley. Thank you, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. You can continue this discussion online simply by going to our website, kqed.org/forum. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Michael Krasner.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.